TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, if you're done kissing Nurse Chapel, I'd like to get this podcast started.
You're going to have to wait for a while, Chris.
I have to say, the two of you are really selling that kiss.
Yeah, could you maybe come back on Thursday? So that would be fantastic.
All right. That's kind of the response I expected there. Well, of course, we are going to be talking about the seventh episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds today, The Serene Squall. A lot of Nurse Chapel kissing in this one, and here's a quick rundown of the story. A humanitarian mission takes an unexpected turn when a visiting counselor, formerly of Starfleet, turns out to be not who she claims. With ulterior motives tied to Vulcan, this Dr. Aspen is more interested in capturing Spock than the Federation flagship. Meanwhile, Pike, Number One, and most of the senior staff plot a mutiny aboard the pirate ship where they're being held by an Orion. Along the way, all sorts of Vulcan affairs are revealed, including the whereabouts of one long-lost brother. So, Matthew, let's just jump into Vulcan affairs, because that's really, not entirely, but largely what this episode is about. Spock's struggle with identity, his human side, his Vulcan side. We also get elements of his history that we've heard about, glimpsed, gotten in one story or another, but otherwise don't know much, and it's starting to get filled in here with a few characters.
I mean, Chris, I feel like you could say this episode is an affair to remember. And so thankfully, the Empire State Building, not seen in this episode, but there is so much going on here that does have to do specifically with Vulcans. And I mean, the fact that we are spending more time with T'Pring, and we actually see Staun, who will end up being her mate for life, you know, in the original series, and bringing Cybok in the mix was phenomenal. And so, and to me, I think that was the most surprising, was the fact that we were going to go there. We are going to do something with Cybok, and we are going to add to that character so that hopefully by the time when we get to Star Trek V, it's going to be a much more, I think, interesting watch because of what we've seen here in Strange New Worlds. And so, one, I hope Paramount is ready to spend some money to upgrade Star Trek V's special effects. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to do this, you're going to be drawing people to that film. And I think that would be a fantastic way of honoring that movie the way they did with the motion picture and its upgrade. So, yeah, I mean, that to me is the talking point of this episode for the overarching is, like, I cannot believe that what we're seeing is that the through line here seems to be building towards something with Cybok, which is kind of shocking. And yet I think a really bold move for them, and I cannot wait to see where it goes, because I never thought that they would touch Cybok.
Yeah, it's interesting. As a creative, I can imagine, and as a writer, I can imagine having this element of Star Trek that so many of the fans have shunned. Cybok as a character to some extent, Star Trek V as a film to some extent, and wanting to take that and do something with it if I had the opportunity. Because if you remember when Star Trek V came out, the first time that we found out that Spock has this brother that we've never heard of before. And I think that most of us at the time had the reaction that Kirk had. Like, Mm-hmm. You don't have a brother.
Oh, right.
Well, yeah, I do. I have a half brother. And of course, nowadays, we also know that he has this adopted sister, Michael Burnham. And so they do all these things with the character. But the film Star Trek V as well, I always feel gets a bit of a bad rap because I think the concept of the story is interesting. The execution mm-hmm. of the story yeah. is not what it needs to be. Mm-hmm. Some of that is due to budget and them not being able to do the special effects the way that were intended. Some of mm-hmm. it is due to attempts to take things that were successful in Star Trek IV and replicate them in this other story where they didn't fit humor and such. So it'll be interesting to see if this storyline, because of course the storyline is going to be developed. It's not like this is the only time that we're going to hear anything about Cybok. Is it going to lead fans to revisit Star Trek V with new eyes and help rehabilitate the image of that film in fandom? I'll be curious to see that.
Well, and it personally, I've always been a fan of that film anyway. So I'm different than a lot of fans, I think, in that sense. But, you know, I think the film mainly to me does suffer because the special effects work is so shoddy, and that really does make a difference in the movie. Otherwise, I mean, for the most part, I think it has some of the best character interactions with especially the main three characters of any of the Star Trek films.
That is the strength of the film.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, but I mean, I don't know if we ever realized or knew that Spock's half-brother is also from an affair, basically, that
I think,
because they say he's his illegitimate, you know, half brother. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, so that's an interesting thing to learn. That, I mean, is it maybe just between? I don't know. It was just before he was married to Spock's mother that he had a relationship with a Vulcan, and, you know, they weren't married, so therefore that's what, you know, I don't know. That's something that in this story, it was like, kind of stuck out to me, especially in the rewatch as we're getting ready for the recording. Huh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, you know, when Spock mentions that in the episode, interestingly, my reaction was that I knew that. But I don't know why, because I'm certain that's not mentioned in Star Trek V. And we've never gotten Cybok in any other things on screen. So then I was thinking, was it from a book? Was it from a comic? And maybe mm-hmm. I'm just misremembering and thinking that it made sense, because we know Sarek's two marriages. Yeah, I don't know. That is interesting. And I think it shows how little Cybok we've gotten over the years, that they have right. a lot of room to play with this character.
Well, and it also does kind of show how little of Sarek we understand
mm-hmm.
as a character. I mean, we just don't really know that character very well. There's a lot, obviously, especially with having a Vulcan son, and before, you know, obviously Spock was born. That's a whole part of his life we have no inclination of. So, yeah, I mean, the idea that this is, you know, about Vulcan affairs and their inner workings and relationships being much more, it seems like, emotionally driven and complicated than we once thought. You know, this show is really kind of driving that home, and I'm very much looking forward to where they take this. And, you know, again, kind of putting Cybok in with Angel the pirate, you know, the fact that they are apparently a couple and in love and, you know, have found each other. Like, I think this creates a whole host of interesting storylines that are going to continue to run through the series as, you know, we continue to build the world of, you know, mm-hmm. Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, yeah. That made sense to me, actually, if you think about Cybok's character, the fact that this Captain Angel would be someone who might identify with him and that he might also latch on to. knowing what we know from Star Trek V and the way that Cybok, I feel, uses people, it will be interesting to see, like, how did she come to know him? What is the nature of their relationship? How involved is she in his movement of rejecting logic and such?
Well, and it also seems to be a thing to which, you know, where is this character of Cybok at this point? Because it did seem like his understanding of who he was and what his mission was something that was new.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
To him in Star Trek V. So here I think we're probably going to get a very raw character who is very connected to his emotions, and that's causing him to obviously rebel against all things Vulcan in the first place. So it definitely makes sense to basically be with an emotional pirate. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like somebody who is completely driven by nothing but emotion.
Yeah.
And well aware of being able to read others' emotions too. So
yeah. Yeah. I think probably we will see a character who like is in the place that you describe and is starting down this path that will lead him ultimately to that mission that he's carrying out in Star Trek V. And I don't know, personally, I love the fact that they're giving us this backstory. And also, if you think about Amok Time and going back and rewatching that, even now rewatching it, I think that that episode reads very differently when we see T'Pring on the view screen for the first time. And the reason that the fight takes place and what was lacking in Amok Time was a sense of history of the relationship of what led Spock and T'Pring to that point. And it's being fleshed out so well here. And what I love about it is that it isn't being presented like it almost seemed like they might be going down that path in this episode, but as it was happening, I thought, no, this is too easy. When they have the whole ruse on the bridge with the kiss, and you know it's a ruse on Spock's part, but you don't know how T'Pring is going to take it. And then when she says that in light of this new information, we need to just break our bond, and they do their little breaky bondy thing there. I'm thinking, okay, she's playing along, but we don't know for sure with her being a purely logical Vulcan if that's what she's doing. And then what we get at the end is this understanding between them that, okay, yeah, I knew you were joking around and you were trying to get out of the situation. And why don't we have a rebonding ritual, which I think we all know what that meant. And, you know, these are elements. And also, when after they had swapped bodies in Spock Amok, the discussion they have at the end of the episode, they're really trying to work this out. They're trying to be together. And the beginning of this episode as well, T'Pring is making a real effort. And the fact that they're giving us this type of relationship, and it's not like, okay, they're together, we're going to show you some of that, and then they're going to break up, and that's going to be the end of the story. I think my meandering point here is that it is really going to make Amok Time much richer when you watch that story. And I think that is the ideal use of a prequel series like this. If you can write it well, and if as a viewer, as a fan, you can be open-minded enough to accept that creatively, you should be able to go back to material that was created 55 plus years ago. And work with it and not be completely beholden to canon in a way that just doesn't allow you to tell interesting stories.
Well, and you can, the thing is that you can do that. If you do that well, it beholds the canon, but it also gives you a new understanding that you didn't have before.
Exactly.
And I think that's basically what the show is really doing well, which is, you know, much of the complaint that many people had about Discovery where they didn't feel like that was happening. This show seems to be taking that criticism. And so, you know, I think that's great. You know, one of the other parts that of this that I was really struck by is that the way in which the whole talk about emotions and everything. And, you know, we get Angel telling Spock that she's been driving at his emotions and playing on them the whole time. And yet, what we see here is that, yes, Vulcans have emotions. They can be spurred in different directions, but they don't necessarily just act on every emotion that they have, right? They keep their emotions in check and use logic to temper their emotions because they have such strong emotions. And so the storyline that we then get with T'Pring and Spock, there's context, there's understanding, there's trust there, there's their whole relationship that they've had before. So she's picking up what he's laying down, right? And it's not just, I go with my first emotion and then I act on it and I do something stupid. And I think this episode was really interesting because to me, it was kind of a repudiation of much of what our culture does, which is just that I act emotionally based on whatever emotion I have, and that's the right thing to do.
In the moment, without much thought.
Right. And that's just not the case. That's not, I mean, because what do we see Pike do? He plays on the emotions of the characters on that ship and gets them to act the way he wants in the way that Angel can't with Spock and T'Pring. And so when we just react emotionally, we may make decisions to which we'll regret later on when we have maybe given it some more thought or use logic again and our wisdom to kind of temper that. And isn't that really what the whole point of this episode is about, which is we're dealing with Spock and his identity, and we already know where Spock is going to go. Spock is going to become the character who says logic. Logic is only the beginning of wisdom. He's somebody who's learned to take his Vulcan and human side and create something different, right? Like it doesn't have to be a binary choice because the reality is he is human. He is Vulcan biologically. Culturally, he is also those things. And he then finds a way to kind of like melt those together as if Spock himself is a representation of a melting pot. And I love that this episode is pointing to, you know, obviously the struggles this character has and where he's going to go. And these are the conversations that kind of, I think, help spur him to get to those points that we'll see, say, in Star Trek VI.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of my favorite parts of Star Trek VI, actually, when he tells Valeris that, yep, 100%. Logic is only the beginning. And yeah, this episode, for me, the core of it is about Spock's identity. But one thing that I think that they do really well here, you know, Star Trek always has provided commentary on the time in which it's produced. And in our world today, there is a lot of discussion and attention paid to the idea of identity in terms of gender. And here, I thought that the use of a transgender non-binary actor to play Dr. Aspen / Captain Angel, and for that character to be a catalyst for exploring Spock's identity as well, I thought was a really good way to address these two topics at the same time through these two characters being paired together, because the identity, I think Dr. Aspen's comments to Spock really hit at the heart of all of this, both in terms of questions of gender identity and how an individual sees themselves versus how the world, how the outside sees them and wants to define them in a certain way, and how Spock also feels that he's defined by being Vulcan. He fights this battle internally between his Vulcan side and his human side. So Dr. Aspen said to him that all species put things into boxes. It's like you're either this or that, and sometimes we act a certain way to fit people's expectations, but that's not necessarily who we are. And I thought just that one line was a really nice summary of this entire issue, both in our real world today and Spock in a science fiction context. And then Spock goes on to say, you are proposing I better balance my human and Vulcan natures. And she says, I'm saying maybe you're neither, meaning neither human or Vulcan. And Spock gives the reaction you would expect from, especially this version of Spock right now, that is nonsensical. And the way Ethan Peck delivers the line was just perfect. If I am not human or Vulcan, what am I? And she says, I mean, that's not my question to answer. And then that last part I thought also hit right at the heart of the issue, which is that I think the discussion going on in society today is that it's the individual's position to decide who they are, not people outside deciding who that person is. And here Aspen's telling Spock, you know, it's not up to me to decide who you are. It's up to you to decide who you are.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think I definitely see what you're saying, and I'm sure that that's probably where they're going. But I also think the storyline is limited in trying to say that, because Spock literally is Vulcan and he literally is human. And those, you can't change those things about who he is. But that doesn't mean that he needs to choose one over the other as if one is better than the other, which is, I think, the question that he's always struggled with, because he was raised to believe that basically his human side is inferior to his Vulcan side.
Yeah.
And that's not true. And that's what I think Spock comes to realize as he gets older, is that actually he can gain strength from both sides of himself. It's not a either or. It is, yes, I'm Vulcan and I'm human. I'm both.
Yeah.
Like, and he embraces the bothness of that, which then creates something to which is slightly unique, right? In the same way that I think, like, you might have somebody who is of mixed race, right? They're both, right? They're neither one or the other. They are both, and that makes them therefore unique, right? In that, and so, like, to me, that I get what you're saying. I struggle a little bit with some of that, because there are realities in the end that just cannot be changed.
I mean, I think if you're going to get into purely like biological, physical aspects, yes. But I think that what you say holds true for individuals in the real world who, what they feel, who they are, may be a combination of what society might normally put into, as Aspen says here, into a box.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think those people can find strength from both sides or multiple aspects of that. Also, if they are allowed themselves to define their identity and be who they are, which I think is another part of this story, is being who you are. It's actually the last line, it's not the last line of the story, but it's the last line before Captain Angel disappears and abandons her crew on the Enterprise. She says, the question isn't what you are, it's who you are. And so I do think that that is one of the parts of the story that the writers were going for, although I do see the story as being about Spock's identity in the Star Trek context, half Vulcan, half human.
Yeah, and I would argue that she's wrong. You can't separate those two things because they are inextricably linked, but that's a whole other podcast. So
Yeah, that's another podcast. I'm kind of on the different side of that. Myself, I think you have control over who you are, and even just situations like going away from, you know, questions of gender identity in life in general. You can't always control what you are, what your circumstances are, but you do have an opportunity to control who you are and also where you go as a person. So, okay, let's talk about, you mentioned a minute ago the whole thing with Pike on the ship. This is something I wanted to ask you about, because we've talked about this a little bit. I think we may have even talked about it in the previous episode. Pike's knowledge of his future, Pike's knowledge that he will be around 10 years from now and he will be fine, and then there will be an accident. Is that influencing how he behaves in various situations now and the decisions he makes and the approaches he takes and so forth? Now, in this episode, I feel like what's happening on the pirate ship is meant to be comic relief of a sort for the more serious dialogue that's going on aboard the Enterprise. But the way that Pike reacts to being captured, the way he interacts with who at the time he thinks is the captain of the pirate ship, and just the lighthearted nature of the whole thing, I felt like might not be the most appropriate reaction for a Starfleet captain when he and his senior crew have all been captured. Do you think that Pike is being more relaxed about these things because he knows that somehow he's going to get out of this because he has to? Otherwise, what happens to him in a decade can't happen. Or is it just them writing the story as to be fun, capture a little bit of that TOS? It reminded me of like Piece of the Action kind of story. What do you think?
I didn't actually think about that idea. And I didn't take it that way at all. I'm not to say that that couldn't be the case, but personally, as I was watching it, it did feel like this was a storyline where Pike realizes this situation and he realizes what he can do in it. Like, it did feel very TOS, I think, in the sense that you realize you're not dealing with the smartest of people. And Pike is able to use his charm, his wisdom of the situation, and his manipulative, psychological baiting of these people to get what he wants. And, you know, it did feel very TOS in that way, in the way in which, you know, Kirk would be able to talk a robot to death, you know? Yeah, that's what this felt like. And in that, I think you're absolutely right. This part was meant to be more comic relief to the much more serious side. And I had fun with it. I mean, even just the way him and number one are kind of bantering back and forth, and she's like, "Oh, not this again," you know, like it's I think all of that stuff is really great.
Yeah.
Because it just adds to the characters and that they know each other and that they've had these experiences together, this kind of thing, like it's happened before and all that. So to me, that's kind of where I ended up going with it. What you said, though, is interesting because it could actually be, that could be there, you know? It really could, so.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that the episode itself, in terms of the writing, I think is just intended to be fun. Have that TOS flavor and give us some lighter moments to play against what's happening on the Enterprise, which is much more serious. I don't think that they're really trying to send us a deeper message about Pike's psyche, but I do think it's interesting that that could be at play. And I just think about how it might put the ship or other members of the crew at risk in the future if he thinks that way.
Yeah, I mean, it could, absolutely.
Yeah, so. I think Pike, the lighthearted nature, though, is in line with Pike's character. I think it was played a little bit overboard this time. But it does fit with what we've seen of his character. It wasn't a stretch. It didn't feel too out of place. And it was kind of fun.
Was this like first date or third date?
That was the great line. And then he says blind date. And Ortegas is like, copy, proceeding with caution.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then I especially loved later when she said, I like when I'm flying manually. It's like the ship and I are in a deep conversation together. Like a third date.
Yep.
And then the smile that she gives, I just thought the writing was good and the acting was even better and very relaxed. Yeah. And you talk about how it feels like number one and Pike know each other. I think Rebecca Romijn does a really good job of playing number one as someone who really has known Pike for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Even that moment when it's early in the episode when Angel's pretending to be Dr. Aspen, and she mentions that Pike's known as Starfleet's Boy Scout. And he says, I don't think anyone calls me that. And number one goes, Chris, it's in your file. It's like literally there. You know, the way she delivered the line was, it really felt like she's known him for ages. Mm-hmm. And it is wonderfully relaxed.
Yeah, I think It's interesting because he actually kind of comes off as like almost like the Superman of Star Trek, where he's just like, he is the big blue Boy Scout, you know, is what they call Superman. And that seems very similar to who Pike is. You know, he's jolly. He's a happy-go-lucky, even in light of what he knows. And one of the things I think you could take it as a negative, but maybe it's a positive in the sense that Pike is just trying to suck the life out of every single moment that he does have.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I get that feeling like that is maybe his attitude, which is, I'm going to enjoy every single millisecond that I've got.
Yeah.
And that's why he is more lighthearted with his crew and why he is much more willing to have fun with them and just enjoy life and all. And I think that's a good lesson for all of us, right? Like, we literally don't know how much time we have left on this earth. And do you think that we're going to spend eternity, wherever we spend it, thinking to ourselves, man, I really wish I had spent more time being depressed?
Right. I actually think about that every time some, you know, like an argument starts or there's some thing that I'm overly concerned about that's maybe not a very big deal. I do stop myself and think about, who knows, you know, at my age, who knows, and what's going on in life, in the world, who knows how long we have left. So maybe we shouldn't dwell on it too much or get too contentious about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Last thing I want to say before we move away from that scene on the pirate ship, in terms of it being played for comic relief, they really showed their hand when the screen spun in with Pike holding on to the wheel and they zoom in on his face. I'm only going to tell you this one time. Get the hell out of my chair. But the smile on his face was like, this is just completely comic relief right now. And of course, the pirate bit at the end was it was a little bit painful to watch, actually, for me. But it was also, it was funny. And number one's reaction was even funnier. And it just felt like the writers attempting to capture the classic TOS laugh on the bridge at the end of an episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I mean, Chris, I feel like we got to talk about going to the chapel and possibly that's getting next. Married because, we talked a little bit about this whole season, really. Like, where is this going to go and how are they going to do this relationship between Spock and Chapel? Because we know it doesn't go anywhere. And yet they have created this almost will they, won't they type of thing, Jack and Diane, you know. It's like, I love it. And part of it is just because Jess Bush is so good of playing off Ethan Peck's Spock. Mm-hmm. And they're just so effortless in it. And the way that they actually now have this shorthand and this banter together, you know, like, when he says that, you know, that I should pay attention to you because you're being charming and awesome, basically. And she's like, yes, you're learning, you know.
She's his teacher.
That whole, exactly. It's such a great relationship. And it is really heartbreaking because she absolutely tells Spock what he needs to hear, that there are no feelings there, because she doesn't want it to be awkward. I think she does value his friendship. But I think she's absolutely falling for this person to which she and he, I think, could have a phenomenal relationship that actually may be more beneficial to Spock in the sense of becoming a more holistic person between Vulcan and human than what he's got with T'Pring, which is right now really awkward because she's pushing him to explore his humanity in a way that's uncomfortable, whereas Chapel is naturally helping him explore his humanity just by being herself.
Yeah, exactly. And the way that Jess Bush plays the end of that kiss, that look on her face.
Oh, yeah.
It just, you can tell that for Spock, it was a ruse. And for her, it was a ruse. She knew that, but it really meant something to her. And then later when he goes to sickbay to talk to her, I mean, the nuances in her expressions as an actress really sold this whole
yes.
situation with Spock. I thought it was very impressive the way that she portrays that.
Yep. I could not agree more. I think she's probably my favorite part of the show right now. And it is just because I think she is playing this to perfection. And she's just so much fun to watch on screen. And so, and in all honesty, really, this whole cast has been fantastic. They're all fun to watch on screen. And I think they all bring something joyful to every moment that they're there. And it's one of those things to which this may be one of the best seasons of a Star Trek series first run as to making you kind of really enjoy and love the characters since TOS.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the sense of like just that kind of immediacy of loving these characters, you know, even my beloved Deep Space Nine, I don't think is as good as this season has been in its first season in the sense of character work. And I mean, really, you know, TOS is actually a hallmark, I think, for how people just kind of immediately fell for the characters from the start. And so this is really well done. And I think characters and actors like Ethan Peck, Jess Bush, and the rest have all been such a big part of that because they just feel so effortlessly natural in their characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you one more thing about Chapel and Spock before we move on to the end here. We know they don't get together in the long term, but we don't know what happens between now. First of all, before the series, we didn't know anything that happened before what we saw in TOS. Mm-hmm. And now we don't know what happens between now and then. Do you think they might take us down a path where they do have some sort of relationship and it doesn't work out, but it doesn't end in an ugly way, and therefore Nurse Chapel is always hoping that they're going to somehow rekindle things, and that's what we are seeing in TOS? Mm-hmm. Taking a little bit of, you know, mental mind canon liberty with what we see on screen, of course, because we are writing into it now.
Right.
But it's just that she's helping him a lot in these episodes that we've been seeing recently. And it seems obvious to me from this story and just expressions, mm-hmm. facial expressions of Ethan Peck,
yep.
that he's moving away from T'Pring. And he's moving a little bit more towards embracing the human side. And there is a connection between those two characters of Chapel and Spock. And so mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, in writing this series and making it interesting for the viewers and not being shackled to canon, but finding a way to ultimately make it all fit together, I'm wondering what they might be able to do with it.
I think this is just my personal opinion, obviously, but I don't think they're actually going to go there. And I think I would like them not to, because there's a realism here that I think there are many people, myself included, where you have been in love with somebody and they are not in love with you, and there's never going to be that opportunity, and you have to make the decision. Do I want to stay close with them, or do I not want to stay close with them? Am I willing to make that sacrifice of that's never going to happen and let that go and just be okay with that? And I think that's a good story to tell, because I think the story can also be one that just because you never get to be romantically involved with someone doesn't mean that their friendship can also not be something that is beneficial and revolutionary to your life, right? So, and we're already seeing that fact with Spock and Chapel, I think on both sides. And I think what would be most interesting, actually, is to find a way to have this experience allow Chapel to be actually open to finding that right person, and we don't know a lot about Chapel other than the fact that she becomes an MD. And so there's a lot of possibilities then of where you could go with that. And so that's just my personal hope, because I feel like it's TV cheap to just allow them to be able to do the thing where they sleep mm-hmm. together or whatever. And then I don't necessarily want that. Personally, I don't want that for either of those characters. Yeah, I don't think they want basically something that can never be fulfilled. And so why even go down that road? Because that's actually, I think, more hurtful if you've made that step and then things don't actually get to progress, you know? So, and all honesty, I love the character of Spock and Chapel here, and I just don't want that for either of them.
I'm mostly with you, and I don't want to see them go down that path either. I think that if they did go down that path and it ends up in a situation that's very hurtful for each of the characters, there is the potential that that pain leads to some sort of character growth mm-hmm. for them as individuals. And there's a realism to that as well. But I don't think they're going to go down that path, and I don't think that they should. But it's interesting what they're doing with them right now. And I'm curious creatively where they might go and how they might find a way to make the pieces fit together. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. And then the last item before our final thoughts is just a quick question for you. Not one for lengthy discussion, but I just have to ask, where's Hemmer? Where do you think he is? Is he fly fishing? Did he borrow Mabinga's hat and go fly fishing?
Yeah. That's a great question. I don't know. I wonder if it's more of a character where they're not quite sure exactly how to have him interacting more with the crew in general. I don't know.
I'm curious. I need to do a little research and find out if there is any like real world explanation, maybe in terms of the actor's mm-hmm. availability or something like that, because I like the character and I want to see more of him. And for him to already have not been in, is it 3 of 7 episodes? Is a bit surprising. And also there was no Uhura in this episode either.
Yeah. And one of the things you're doing when you're doing television like this is that you don't want to just throw characters in to throw them in. And you know, so far the show has done a great job of that. When characters are there, they have something that kind of adds a little bit to their character, you know, even like Ortegas, it's like, her little moments there add little tiny bits to her character. You know, the little bit with Number One and Pike, it's adding to Number One's character and their relation, you know? So they seem to be pretty good about not just throwing characters in and not really giving them anything. So hopefully, I mean, I'm with you. I would love to have that character have more to do because I find him an interesting character. So,
yeah. All right. Well, final thoughts and ratings. What do you have?
I think this show, it's just another solid episode. I would say this is a clear 4 out of 5 for me. And mainly just because I think you did mention, and I think you're right on target, Chris, that there's a little bit heightened overacting going on with the pirate storyline. But otherwise, this is just another episode that I really liked. You know, it's another episode where it's like, as this show continues, I'm thinking, man, I think I might get this episode, this season out when it comes out for home release. Although I'm super annoyed that these don't come out in 4K. It's just ridiculous.
They should.
4K disc. Because they film them in that way. And I don't understand why we're not like, it's dumb to me. It's like, real dumb. So all that to say, this is a great episode, and I am heartily looking forward to the last 3. So how about you?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I was thinking that overall there was something about this episode that didn't quite connect with me as much as the others. And so if I'm ranking all 7, mm-hmm. this might be 7th out of 7 for me. But that doesn't mean I don't like it, because I've liked all the episodes this season. I think it's been a very, very strong season. I think there's really great commentary and character building for Spock in this episode. I think that the comic relief with Pike was a little bit overdone for me, but I love the Spock elements and the Chapel elements. Mm-hmm. And there was one other fun little thing in here. The whole Alpha Braga 4. Alpha Braga 4. So it's a very sneaky TNG reference in Inheritance when they look at the routes of travel on the screen. There is a reference to Alpha Braga 7, the planet, which is named after Brannon Braga. And so that might upset some fans who are watching this these days that don't like the Braga era, but they did throw that in here, which I thought was kind of fun.
Nice. Yeah, that's fun.
It was almost like a double entendre for me because I also at first felt like they were saying like Alpha Braga 4, like it was not a real place and they're bragging about their ability mm-hmm. to start mutinies. Yeah. But apparently something did happen on the planet Alpha Braga 4. With Pike number one at some point. But overall, I enjoyed the story. I'm going to give it 6 serene squalls. Well, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on the serene squall. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come right on up. And if it doesn't, just type the whole name, the Babel Conference. It is a closed group, so if you are joining for the first time, please be sure to answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. We do that because we don't want it to just be yet another Facebook group. It is meant to extend the conversation beyond our podcasts, so we'd love for you to share your thoughts there on the post that you'll find for this show. Just share in the comments, and your fellow listeners and Matthew and me will all see those. And if you'd like to send us email, you can also do that. Just go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Saddle Up, and that'll come to Matthew and me by Pony Express. And in social media, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere, you can find us under the username TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not busy practicing your pirate imitations, where can people find you?
Are you be finding me over on social media? Over MattRushing02, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero, any of those places, would love for you to follow me, and I'd love to talk to you. You can also find me, of course, here on the network. We've got a whole side of the network not devoted to Star Trek, because we talked so much Star Trek, we want to talk about all those other fandoms, so go to the 602 Club and check out all the shows we got there, because we've got us some bonus shows in that same feed, so you get so much bang for your buck. You can also find me doing The Orb. Chris, you and I talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Warp 5, where we talk about Star Trek Enterprise, Literary Treks, about the books and the comics of Star Trek, and then The Artificial Tango. Chris, we're talking about Star Trek Picard. We wrapped up season 2 because that just wrapped up, so that was super fun. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, doing 2 shows there. One is a completed show I did with Drea Kaufman, and we talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And, of course, you can also find me doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, which is a Star Wars podcast where we talk about Star Wars each and every week. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to figure out how to hide the fact that you have a half-brother named Cybok from everyone, where can people find you?
You've heard of him, haven't you? Cybok Jones. Yeah. He's he's well known back in Alabama. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I didn't. So
it's too bad I'm not from Florida, because then he could be Florida Man, right?
Oh, that's true. That's true.
When I'm not hiding Cybok's existence, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing the shows with you, which you mentioned. Also, Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time, and there's Interphase, and I'm in all sorts of past episodes in the back catalog on various shows. So check all of that out if you're interested in hearing more of my thoughts on Star Trek. You can also find me in social media if you'd like to chat. My username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere in social media, but Twitter is where I'm most active, and I'd love to hear from you there. If you'd like to help us keep this show and everything we're doing on the network going, We could definitely use your support. To find out how to get involved, just visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. You can become an associate producer, get involved in other ways, and we'd like to send a huge thank you to everyone who's supporting us right now. We would not be here without you, so thank you very, very much. Well, Matthew, I am going to go hang out in Pike's Quarters, you know, by the fireplace, maybe have a good meal before we get together again next time to talk about more Strange New Worlds.
Chris, that sounds like a fantastic idea, and so let's just saddle up, lock and load.
Giddy up, partners, and welcome to Saddle Up, our dedicated... I just thought I'd be like Pike, you know, put on a little accent there, get into the mood.
Arg, won't you? You won't be doing that anymore, laddie, if you keep it up. I'll have you walk the plank.
Please stop. All right, here's the real introduction.